computer.
Oh, started the recording.
Friends, family, everyone who's watching here, this should not be a surprise to you that the recording started in the way that it did. You who have watched us on Facebook, you know who we are. You know what we do, and you know why we do it. This is Jeff Lammers coming back to you again. Thanks for watching the podcast, listening to the podcast, the audio, the video, whatever, however you're digesting and absorbing the information. My name is Jeff Lammers. I welcome you back. Thanks for being here. We have a very special guest tonight. His name is Mark Croteau. If you've seen us do our joint lives on Facebook, we just created a YouTube channel, and we're going to be doing YouTube lives from here on out. We've got some very, very cool things coming up for you. He is what you would call a business partner, partner in crime, not literally. And I've known Mark for a handful of years, the better part of half a decade, if not a little bit more than that. He's a close personal friend of mine. He has agreed to be a part of this, to subject himself to the questions that I'm going to ask in an effort to get to know him a little bit better, learn about his story, his journey, and ultimately where he feels he belongs, you know, before his time on this planet is over. So Mark, I usually, in fact, that's not true. I never give a glowing, scathing, you know, an amazing review and a bio on you because I could. I know you well enough. But from what right. I find is most people want to know directly from the source, the horse's mouth, whatever term you want to use. So why don't you start off, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you've come from, where you are now, where you hope to be. We'll pull some questions out of there. We'll talk. We'll get to know you a little bit. Find out how your ethics, your moral beliefs, your belief in a higher power, source, creator, whatever you want to call it, has kind of brought you to where you are today and where you're going to be in the next 5, 10, 20 years.
Sure. So I grew up here in Michigan, born in 69, and obviously a couple more years worth of Vietnam there, which obviously I don't remember, but born in a nice Catholic home and a big family. Then my real dad left when I was about 7 years old, and I got a new dad, which mother remarried. And continued on that Catholic thing. So typical GM family, good Catholic home, five brothers, three sisters, your typical middle class family. Father retired in the early 80s or mid 80s, and we left and we went to Las Vegas. And stayed there for maybe 3-4 years. I stayed on for another year. And then finally ending up in Phoenix, Arizona. And then in Phoenix, Arizona, I had a little taste of work in the work world, I guess, going from a rebellious youth to being a somewhat reasonable or responsible young individual. And in that time, really kind of stepped away from faith, or not faith, but religion. And then coming into, I guess you'd want to say late 20s, early 30s, meeting my wife, and then revisiting faith and attempting to kind of put my hands on that once again. And not really grasping it. It was something that just like a big show to me, and there was no real message to it. Reason being, it was not the people I was drawn to. It was actually the congregation that actually really turned me off. It's really kind of had a strong effect on me, and I kind of looked at church in that way. It just became one big show, and I thought it to be, in lack of a better terms, very fake, and I really didn't appreciate it. Where I find faith, I find faith in humanity. I find faith in a higher power. Yes, I believe in God, but the whole fact of a religion bothers me. It's not to say that I don't respect it. I have an overwhelming respect for people of religion and faith. I respect all men and women, and I take a lot of time and have that good moral compass, being truthful, being forthright with people, speaking the truth, and really taking time to understand what makes you feel good. And if you do have a higher sense of consciousness or a higher sense or a higher being that you look to, and if you call it Jesus Christ, I respect you even more. But again, I guess that's kind of it in a nutshell. Kind of backtrack a little bit. Also too, you know, growing up in the Midwest here, obviously a lot of drinking. And then getting out into the West, out into Arizona and Nevada and places like that, lots of problems during that time. Okay. And then going through recovery after I had been through a lot of traumatic events, losing my mother, losing girlfriends and things of that nature, that really drew me to a higher sense of higher power or Jesus. Okay. So yeah, that would kind of summarize things.
Okay.
I know that's kind of vague, but at the same time, yeah.
No, you dove relatively deep there and covered a lot, you know, pretty quickly. I want to touch on a couple points here that I heard you say, raised in, from what I assume is biological father, in a Catholic home. Was would you call stepfather? Was that a Catholic home too? Or was that your upbringing more of after your mother remarried, you know, your father left?
Both.
Okay. And as far as the large family aspect of that, are those, would you call them, I mean, they're your family regardless of how you view them, but are they, you know, when did your father leave? I guess your dad leave.
My real dad left when I was 7 years old. I don't even have any physical memories of it.
Okay. So the family that you know, the siblings, et cetera, are maybe not from him. They're essentially half siblings, but you grew up with them as their siblings.
Yes.
Okay. So knowing that, what you know now, did that affect you as a child? Did you realize that as you know, maybe 10, 11, 12 years old? That he wasn't your real dad? Did that affect your life in any way, your views?
Views in what?
Just in life. Like, because I've never been in a scenario like this.
I always have felt differently, but I did have that family bond. But then as people matured and as people graduated high school and went on to the military and things of that nature, and sure. They went on to go start their families and whatnot. There was complete separation. So what I have now is me and my wife, and I have what I have. I am me. Yes.
So your family was in Michigan, being General Motors. It's safe to assume you guys were in the East Side, Detroit area.
Just outside of Pontiac, actually.
Outside of Pontiac. So once your stepdad, do you call him dad? Can I ask that?
Yes.
So once he retired,
yes.
He retired in the mid-80s, you guys took a journey and you transplanted to Vegas.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a journey like that, much, much shorter distance from West Michigan to another place in West Michigan. For me at that point, I was relatively young, still fairly impactful for me. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. I can't imagine being, you know, teenager, whatever you were, and then jump into, you know, halfway across the country, clear across the country. How did that affect you? How did that impact you?
Forced me to grow up. Obviously, being a young teenager here in Michigan, developed a few bad habits, like I shared earlier.
Yep.
Obviously bending my elbow and doing crazy things that crazy kids do. Not really getting in trouble with the law, but getting in trouble with my parents, you know, quite a few times. And then getting out to Las Vegas, and that's where I learned to hustle. Not only did I learn how to do a job, but I also learned how to hustle.
What do you mean when you say that? Because that can be different. That can be interpreted differently depending on who you're asking and who's listening. You care to share a little bit on that?
Moving products. Okay. How's that?
Okay. I told you ahead of time. This is an interview that's going to go. It can go deep. So, whatever yes. you're. So you learned how to do things that some people would not necessarily look up to. And that was more of a, was that a survival thing for you? Or was that more of a rebellion thing for you? Can you pinpoint that?
It was a rebellious thing.
Okay. Okay.
I've never been one to follow the rules. I've always wrote my own rules.
Okay.
Yes.
And that was the time in Vegas. You were there for a handful of years. Then you said a couple of years. Then you and the family moved to Phoenix. You stayed behind for a little bit, but then you were in the Phoenix metro area. You went with them eventually, right?
Yes.
Okay. Did you carry over, I'm going to call them habits, carry over those traits and habits? Okay. So your experience in Vegas, people know of Vegas as glitz, glamour, lights, action, constantly things moving. People who know me,
that's what they sell you. That's what they sell you.
Okay. Well, that was my experience. I went to Vegas when I was 14 years old on a family vacation. You can't do anything in Vegas as an under 21 teen, really. And it wasn't like I was living there. We went on a family vacation. Love my parents dearly. Still don't understand why we went there. I had to be guarded, escorted by security to go to the video arcade. Regardless, things as a 14-year-old that I was like, I didn't know stuff like this existed, coming from little old protected, sheltered West Michigan. First time, again, so I'm 39. I'll be 39 in like 4 days as this is. Last year, just after my 38th birthday, first time I ever had known encounter with a prostitute in Vegas. I was in Vegas for 8 hours. 8 hours is all it took. And then all of a sudden this happened. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. How did I get my, it wasn't like anything happened. I was walking down the street. I'm wearing my running shorts and shirt. And I'm like 45 degrees and I'm running around in Vegas. Like, yeah, cause it's December and in Michigan it's 22 degrees and in Vegas it's 45. I'm like, it's warm. So I can't imagine as a teenager what that was like. And then to carry over into Phoenix like that.
My first job, I was 18 years old. Okay. I just turned 18 before I left Michigan, and I got to Las Vegas, and less than 90 days later, my very first job, I was a private security officer, walking around with my little uniform and my little badge and my little nightstick and my little radio and talking to people. Wow. And then less than 30 days later, I'm sitting in the rear portion of Caesar's Palace and doing the very last Jerry Lewis telethon. At Caesar's Palace.
Wow.
And I'm guarding Joan Rivers. I'm meeting Sammy Davis Jr. I'm meeting Jerry Lewis. I'm meeting the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. I'm meeting Rip Taylor, Chuck Mangione, Mike Tyson. All these amazing, amazing individuals. And I'm just some kid from the Midwest that couldn't even pretty much fight his way out of a wet paper bag. And they're like, yeah, you're going to guard this guy. Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah. Mike Tyson needs a security guard. That's, half his size. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Okay. At that time I was what? 115 pounds, 130 pounds, soaking wet. Okay. Sure. Let me just put that up there.
So how did that hit you, man? You go from Eastern Michigan outside of Pontiac. And then all of a sudden you're in the dirt in Vegas, and you're not necessarily mingling and hanging out with, but you're assigned to protect the who's who of the celebrity culture in the 80s, man. Like
it was shocking. It was a real reality kick. It was exciting. I'm going home and I'm telling my parents that I'm shaking hands with all these amazing people. And I'm back at Caesar's Palace less than 24 hours later. And I'm meeting, Walter or, top-ranked boxers. I'm meeting, you know, I'm probably mingling with people I didn't even realize at the time, multi-billionaires, you know what I mean? I'm going through Caesar's Palace and eating in a cafe that you could have caviar and lobster tails. Wow. because you work for Caesar's Palace.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
After the event, after the Jerry Lewis telethon, after that was done, I went back to Caesar's Palace at kind of as a station, as they were doing the construction. And I got to stay in private suites in Caesar's Palace because that was our central hub. And we're talking rooms that are the size of my apartment building, which Wow. was the building. Yeah. So, you know, the impressionability of it at that point, wicked, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then you give me $300-$400 or whatever I was making. You find ways to entertain yourself.
You're on top of the world. As a teenager, you're making a few hundred dollars. You're rubbing elbows essentially with celebrities. You're meeting them. You're shaking hands. You're talking to them. You're kind of out of your element totally. And you're going, holy cow, what is this? What did your parents think of all that? I mean, the whole idea of you being at Caesar's, you doing what you were doing.
At the time, my dad was like, do what you do. You know what I mean? My mother was a traditional Midwest mother, you know, stay at home, take care of the house, and pay the bills.
All right.
You know what I mean? Okay. At that point, my mother was early 50s, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
So going from there and doing all that, doing what you do, learning the skills that would take you into the next phase. I mean, you took that into Phoenix eventually. What was that like? Because, I mean, Phoenix is a relatively, obviously, a large city in Arizona, but it's nothing like Vegas, to my understanding, right? I mean, when you were there.
It's a different animal.
Okay.
It really is.
How do you mean?
It's a totally different animal.
Okay.
It doesn't have the glim and the glance, okay. But it's still got your high-profile people, and everything is always on the move.
Okay.
So, you know, when I left Vegas, I had acquired some very serious habits, okay?
Okay.
A lot of chemical intake and a lot of...
Probably some health-threatening habits, I'm assuming?
Legal, yeah, you know. You know, I never got in trouble, and not to incriminate myself, which this is more than 20 years ago, so I'm not really
concerned. Your timeline is, it doesn't matter. Your timeline is so far off. We have an audience of three, so.
Yeah. You know, so pretty bad chemical problem.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of drinking. And by that point, I'd hit the skids in Vegas. And I had some pretty important people looking at me. And I had a very unique encounter on pretty much about the last day that I was in Las Vegas. And
you want to share a little bit about that or not really?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. At that point, we were, we were running an entire apartment complex that was a little hole in the wall kind of place. And we were kind of running it, if you know what I mean.
I got you.
I had a car roll up to me one morning, just as the sun was kind of peeking over Sunrise Mountain. And they kind of rolled the window down and they said, we know who you are, we know what you do, and it's going to end. And that's the last time I was in Las Vegas. Less than 48 hours later, I was on a bus, Greyhound,
wow.
to Phoenix. Yes.
So did you feel... It sounds like it was very threatening. Did you feel threatened at that point?
I was, I had involved myself with some not so friendly individuals.
Okay.
Lots of dope and guns.
Okay. So why Phoenix then?
That's where my parents were.
Okay. So you eventually just followed them there. You weren't like, I'm going to go back to Michigan and get further away. Because Phoenix is only a handful of hours away, right?
Right.
Okay. So it was a convenience thing to go to Phoenix where your folks were, back with the family. what was your intention there? Was it just like, my family's here, I got a place to go? Or were you kind of like, man, this is heavy now, you know, I'm dealing with some really serious stuff, maybe I can start over? Like, what were your thoughts and feelings? Or was it just simply like, hey, family's here, I know where I can go?
Combination of all three.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. And I had got to Phoenix and got myself right again. And then about 6 or 8 months after I was in Phoenix, I found dope again.
Okay.
You know,
and, or found you. I mean, I know those habits, old habits, those habits die hard. I mean, it's, you know, you get around similar people, it's not hard to, you know, find it again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So pretty much let's fast forward.
Well, let me ask you a question here. Why did your family move from Vegas to Phoenix then? What was the purpose on that? Your parents?
Cheaper golf, correct. Cheaper golf prices.
Okay. All right. So we'll take us forward then here. At what point then, you mentioned at one point you walked away from your religion, your faith for a while. You were raised Catholic by your family. Was mm-hmm. it in your teenage years then you were in Vegas and you started to do what you do and you started to say what I'm
I kind of noticed it. I kind of started noticing it 16, 17,
okay.
Right in that area. It was just like, okay, I confess my sins. We go to church on Sundays. We do Ash Wednesday. We have Good Friday. We have Easter, Christmas, and whatever other, you know, religious matter occurs on particular days. It's pretty much the same spiel every Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm not buying it.
So you felt it was just kind of a wash, rinse, repeat thing. You could go about your day 6 days a week, and then on Sunday you could confess your sins, all was healed, all was forgiven, you know, and then Monday through Saturday we can kind of do whatever. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
What I found more peaceful was being out in the woods, being on a mountaintop, looking at nature, being alone, finding that solitude. And that was just kind of the first quote unquote eye-opening experience to what God is.
Okay.
Because I didn't find it in church. I didn't find it in religion.
You didn't find it in a book. You found it outdoors and in appreciating what nature is and how it made you feel.
Yes. Find it in the unique message that a complete stranger will tell you.
All right.
Or that little old lady that says blessings to you, baby boy.
Sure.
God is a gift for you. And you never forget those little experiences. It's not a Bible thumper. It's not somebody that is, and you got this and you got that and you're going to hell and you're going to this. And if you don't do this and you don't, you know, and all that crap. You know what I mean? That was always a... Stay away from me.
So my guess is that you grew up with a little bit of that, which turned you off from that. I had the same thing. A lot of I noticed and I felt a lot of hypocrisy in the church, which kept me away for 20-something years as well. You started noticing these things in individuals. An old lady, bless you, sweet child, whatever. The message from a stranger. Do you have an example of a moment, like a moment of clarity where like a message from a stranger just really hit you and you're kind of like, whoa, where did that come from? Do you have any of those?
Greyhound bus on my way from Las Vegas to Arizona.
All right.
The gentleman that sat next to me, actually he was a drunk and he was sitting there drinking a bottle of 151 rum because he was sharing it with me.
Okay.
But as he left, because his next stop was wherever, whatever the trip was from Nevada to Arizona.
Sure.
And he said, look, you're changing and God has a gift for you when you get to this next location.
That's what he said to you?
Yeah.
Did you write him off as like, oh, he's just a drunk or whatever? Or was it one of those moments of clarity where you're like, whoa?
It didn't hit me until, I don't know, a couple of years later. You know what I mean? Because I never forget those unique experiences. Even though I've probably screwed up my head, you know, more times than I can count with drugs and alcohol. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, we all have our experiences the way that we do. Let's consider what you had gotten into in Vegas. Had you gotten into it, you were going through everything that you were going through, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this could be the end of whatever. I need to hop on this. But you met this guy. Now here we are 35 years later, whatever, and you're still talking about, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of those. That's a moment of, would you say a moment like, not that God is speaking to you, but like something happened.
The funny part about it, that was in 1994.
Okay.
I didn't realize what the gift was, but what the gift was when I met my wife.
Okay, so that was in Vegas?
Tremendous. Yeah. That was 1994 that I transitioned from Nevada to Arizona. And then all the way up to 2001. So an additional 7 years.
So you met your wife in Arizona?
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome, man. So if you hadn't have done what you did in Vegas, takes you to Arizona, you're going to see your family and meet your wife. You've told me that story before. I don't know if you want to get into that, but obviously you had mentioned you got maybe a little bit back into faith after meeting her. Did I hear you correctly on that?
Yes. Okay. But also too, in 1999, I had a pretty toxic girlfriend from like 96 until 99.
Okay.
And in that matter, towards the end of it in 1999, in a matter of 3 months, I lost my job, my apartment, my girlfriend, and then moved home. And 30 days later, I lost my mom.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
How was that stretch of time? That sounds like an absolute, like, you know, earth shattering, mind clearing.
Oh, yeah. Suicidal. You know what I mean? Absolute suicidal thoughts.
How did you get through that? How did you find the strength to get through that?
I stayed numb. Okay. I tried to drink myself to death. I even relapsed on doing meth again and went through all that bullshit. Excuse me.
You're all right.
And then one day I had woke up in about the tail end of August of 99. I looked around my situation and I was living in somebody else's apartment, and it was just party 24 hours central. He had a big cocaine problem. And at that time I was pretty much done with drugs. I dabbled a little bit, but it was drinking and smoking weed just constantly. Okay. Just 26 hours a day, 8 days a week over at that house. And I just woke up and I didn't even have the clothes on my back. Basically all I had, I think I had at that time, I had 4 t-shirts and 2 pairs of jeans, and that was it. There was nothing else.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I woke up at that and I was just like, I'm freaking done. And that's where I went into a halfway house program and did a 12-step program and
okay.
got sober. And then by 2001, we all know what happened on September 11th. And then my birthday is in the first week of October. Mm-hmm. And by the end of that week, which was the 11th of October, I had walked over to a little Mexican restaurant and was sitting with my roommate. My roommate got up and went to go use the restroom, and a young lady walked in and sat in the booth in front of us, and I started making small talk with her, asked her to come join us for lunch.
So why did you make small talk with her? Because that happens to people every day, all day, you know.
Yeah.
By this moment.
Chasing girls.
okay. Your honesty is appreciated for sure.
Yeah. I mean, 32 years old, had a good job, had a car. I mean, what more could you ask?
What were you doing at this time? Because just recently before that, you know, not long before that, lost girlfriend, house, everything, you know, mom, all that stuff, just a few, you know, a little bit before that. What were you doing there? Good job. What would you?
Trying to find my way, you know. But I had just landed my very first bank job.
Okay.
And it was a reasonable amount of money, or at least what I thought at that time. It was probably only 10, 11 bucks an hour, but I thought I was on top of the world.
Okay.
Because I only had like $300 in expenses. I mean, I was bringing home almost $1,000 every 2 weeks. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So at that time, I was really heavy into recovery. And I had a roommate at that time that was very religious.
Okay.
And he would share things with me. And then I got so, when we were going through my recovery program, I was getting all of my tattooing done.
Okay.
Which was also one of my sponsors. And he was a devout Christian. And then I got another mentor or neighbor that became my best friend. And he was a devout Christian.
Okay.
And, you know, that influence just kind of, it kind of steered me in that direction. But then there was a sudden change and a sudden reality kick. The pastor of that church, without announcing what he was doing, one day, one Sunday, I was not at that service, but he had openly confessed that he was having an external affair with his secretary.
Okay.
And his family actually owned the church that they resided at.
Oh.
Exactly. And the whole entire congregation turned on him for his honesty and for his work. You know, they chastised him. They had just ostracized him. They, you know, you can never come back, blah, 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 blah. And that really reflected on me a very negative cantation.
Now I'm guessing because, sorry to interrupt, but this man was expressing his honesty. He succumbed to a weakness, his own desires, and he was admitting these things. And you probably heard, like I did as a child, it'll be better for you if you admit to it than if I find out other ways. You know what I mean? It'll be worse for you if you lie to me. And you maybe subscribe to that. And then you witness this in the complete opposite of what you were led to believe. Like this man confessed to doing
something. And he
even
saved his marriage. After he was exiled, he even saved his marriage.
He confessed he saved his marriage, but everybody just was like, nope, can't do it. You know, rather than acknowledging that we are humans and we are imperfect and we sin.
Exactly.
I can see where that shaped your, so you, that was obviously a major, major shift on that.
And then there was another episode at that time. We had some other influencers in our life, and they tried steering us towards Jehovah's Witnesses.
Okay. So tell me about that experience, because that's not one. I haven't had anybody with that experience that I'm aware of on here. Was that probably wasn't a good experience, or was that, did it give you new ideas,
no,
or what?
No, not at all. It started off relatively simple. You read this little magazine. We talk about things. We talk about moral compass and how this and that revolves around your life, and this is the way, and blah, blah, blah. And then they said, well, we'd like you to take a little further step, and we'd like to have some outside members or brothers come into your home and actually kind of break it down for you.
Okay.
At that time, I had begun my reptile journey, and I had quite a bit of snakes in my house. I think at that time I had 40 or 50 snakes in my house. And these two quote unquote brothers came into my house, and they were impressed at first. And then they started insulting me. and they started to say, you know, if you play with snakes, that is playing in the dirt. And if you so choose to be in the dirt, that you will need to remove yourself from this behavior.
So you had a lot of negative experiences with the church.
Yes.
Yet today.
And just to be clear on that, I politely showed them the front door.
Okay. So you had a lot of negative experiences in the church here, yet you still have a foundational belief in God. You may not go to church and all these things. I interrupted your story about your wife. She had an influence on you with that, I believe, right?
Yes.
So can you summarize that a little bit? Obviously, she had a major impact on you. She took your heart, whatever you want to call it. You saw this woman. How did she, with her beliefs, impact and influence your own?
Well, we've always both had a good sense of moral compass. And what is right is what is right. You know what I mean?
Okay.
We both kind of have had that kind of, I've got my fill of the show. Okay. And so at this point in our lives, you know, it's pretty much we believe in a higher sense of purpose. But we are not influenced by the human element of faith.
Okay.
Or of religion. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay.
Help me understand that a little bit.
I'm not controlled by religion.
Okay.
I do not want to be controlled by religion.
Okay.
And that may upset a few people to hear. But I've seen enough of the hypocrisy and I've seen enough of the negative influence that it does have on people. Now, that's not to say that it's not a very powerful entity. It's something that is very good for people. It's just not good for Mark.
Okay. So when you say that, obviously you're not going to church, not doing all these things every day, but you have a belief in a higher power on that. That's influenced you in some way, your wife and that kind of thing. It's influenced your ultimate decisions. Have you had an instance where, because you've got quite a story about your past. You've got a book's worth mm-hmm. of things you can write about. Tell us about a time then where you were maybe wrapped up or about to be wrapped up into something and your moral beliefs, your ethical beliefs, your moral compass said, nope, I cannot do this.
First time being homeless.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? I'm not going to ask you to tell us the whole story, but.
Right after I had kind of finished up on some schooling in Phoenix, and kind of transitioning into a job or what I thought was going to be a good job, went away and lost my apartment. Really took a really hard spill because at that time I didn't know how to emotionally control myself. Okay. So resorting back to more drugs and alcohol and putting myself even further in the hole.
Okay.
And then having to rely on people from the church to pick me back up. And I did that through the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And I kind of, it steered me right. It did. And I have, that's still the respect level of it that I have of it. Okay. That, you know, I still respect enormously the fact that it does turn your life around. It does give you that good influence in your right. path. There is a higher power. There is God, you know, but I'm not buying the show and I'm not buying the influence of another man or woman influenced by that to force control. Does that make sense?
It sounds like the majority of it is what you're saying and is your experience with the Catholic Church, all of the You used the term show. I'm trying to think of a more eloquent term. The procedures, the processes that they go through during Mass, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. It was more done for, because it, in your opinion, an experience, it was done because it was routine, because it was ritual, because it was always done that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Okay. All right. Okay. I appreciate you clearing that up. I want to kind of shift a little bit here and talk about people of influence in your life, because we've done a lot of lives together. We talk about people. I have to understand and believe that your wife, your wonderful, beautiful wife, was a major influence in your life. I don't know exactly the role that she played, but obviously it was impactful enough for you to make that decision within 24 hours, is my understanding, right?
Actually, 6 hours.
6 hours. So she hit you so hard, impactful, that you said 6 hours later, you're like, hey, I may not have a ring, but I want to spend my life with you.
Yes. Okay. 6.5 hours after I met my wife, or future wife at that time, at that little Mexican restaurant, took her back to my house, leave a few things unsaid, but at that same
story.
Right. At that time, I pretty much just looked at her, and I had been through so much at that point that I had been single for the better part of a year, year and a half at that point, and she just walked in at the right time. And that was that. The first time she came to my house, she never left. And that was 19 years ago. Yeah.
That's cool, man. That's very cool. Tell me about two other people, or maybe a few other people, if you got them, that have had a like a positive influence in your life, influence the way that you think, the way that you believe, the way that you act, you know, the things that you do. You had mentioned, I don't know if the man on the bus was one of those people, obviously.
No.
What you said was impactful.
No, that wasn't random. That was just a random little positive message from God.
Okay.
That wasn't a person of influence. People of influence to me, obviously, is my rock and my foundation, which is my spouse. You are an influence to me. The reason being is that we have both had tragedy in our path, past. We've overcome obstacles, and we have walked similar paths. And the reason that you are an influence to me is because of your faith, because I admire that in you. Because you're not one to impose it on people. You're not one to use it as a quote-unquote crutch or a drill. And that's something that I've always had the deepest admiration and respect for you because of that. There's another individual, I'm not going to say his name, but he does reside in New Mexico. And I've met him physically met him. But I've been dear friends with him for almost 20 years.
You know who he is.
Yes. And believe it or not, that gentleman has been probably one of my biggest influences in my life. And he is as well a devout Christian. He knows more about the Bible and scripture than you could possibly shake a stick at. And if you were to talk to him, you would never even guess it. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, he knows pretty much more about most faith and religions than most priests I've met, if that's kind of, yeah.
Okay.
And I've never once seen this individual raise his voice. I've never once heard him speak ill-fated of things, people, places, events. And I've never once really ever seen him judge. He does not judge, you know. That is somebody that I truly, when I got sober this last time, he is one that I really took a lot of time and picked his brain, and we talked recovery and we talked about how to remove emotion from statement and how to actually communicate with people rather than talking to people. Okay. We really drilled that home, and he really worked with me a lot. When I was going through my withdrawal symptoms and whatever else I was going through, and sure. And the path that I took, and he would interject, matters of faith with me, to show me, to walk in faith, because God does have your back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me about, this year has been difficult for just about everyone. There have been people that, you know, have ultimately had some great successes for the year, but without challenges to start. Tell me about your biggest success and your biggest failure in 2020. And then looking at 2021, another part of this, what are you going to do to smoothly transition into the new year? We're only a month and a half away.
Biggest success and biggest setbacks. Well, obviously this little pandemic we're going through has been the biggest setback. That has been a very big setback on the fact of social anxieties and work-wise here at home. Mm-hmm. Obviously owning what I own and working through those daily challenges. Which I will leave aside, not to put it out there. But my biggest success is that I'm still sober and I still have a loving wife. I still have a roof over my head and we are still gaining momentum. Biggest challenges, I guess, dealing with social anxiety, learning how to spend a lot of time at home. Okay. Yeah. And that's been somewhat challenging as well.
All right. So how are you?
Stir crazy at points.
Oh yeah. We've all gone stir crazy at points, especially here in Michigan. You know, we've been ordered. There's a lot of things that have recently been reshut down here in Michigan, which aren't the way in other states for sure. Especially in the year of the election, you know, I guess depending on what the recount looks like, you know, we may or may not have a new president. According to some, we do. According to others, we don't. I guess we'll, you know, January, we'll find out. What are you doing to smoothen the transition? Smoothen, is that a word? What are you doing to make an easy transition into 2021? We're creating new words here on the podcast.
Well, I'm going to smoothen.
You're going to smoothen your way into 2021. Oh, man. All right, then. Sure.
Yeah. Kudos. Right. I really don't. I guess it's just another day for me. Okay. The whole transition from 20 to 21. It's okay. Just another day. It's just another calendar year. It just means that we can. I don't really believe in the whole New Year's resolution or this is what I'm going to do over the course of the next year. Okay. I'm not going to say that I fly by the seat of my pants, but I don't really want to look at what are you going to do in 30 days, 60 days, and 90 days, because past is past, present is present day, and the future is yet to be written. Yeah. Easier said than done sometimes. Its own set of personalities and own sets of challenges. I try not to live in the past, but sometimes the past can open its doors, and there can be some ugly things that root its ugly head. If there is things in your karma bank, so to speak, but if you've got a clean plate, a clear conscience, and you can look ahead, so be it. Go attack the day. Reevaluate, reengage, recalibrate, move forward. Never quit. All right. Get it done. 1, 2, 3, go.
You mentioned sometimes things from the past will come up. We're going to wrap up shortly here. But you mentioned things come up in the past. Negative emotions come up from the past. Do you have some key things that you do to overcome those that would help our listeners, help our viewers?
Yeah, I do. reach out to a person. Okay. Take time and find a person that you are safe with, whether it be a loved one, a mentor, a priest, a pastor, a doctor, somebody that you can feel safe with and that can keep a neutral, non-biased approach with you. Because that's very, very important. And don't be fake. Don't sugarcoat it. If it hurts, talk about the pain. If it makes you cry, cry. If it makes you mad, be furious.
Okay.
Don't harm anybody. Allow yourself to enter that emotion, dictate the emotion, and remove it from the statements in the following excerpts. You know what I mean? It's easier said than done. It takes practice. It takes a will to be disciplined, because nobody ever gives you discipline. Your parents don't give it to you. Your teachers don't give it to you. Law enforcement doesn't give it to you. The only person that is responsible for creating discipline is the reflection staring back in the mirror. That's it. That's it. Wake up, make your bed, find your discipline. Okay? I can't tell you to do it. Jeff can't tell you to do it. The only person that's going to tell you to do that is the reflection staring back in the mirror. That's it.
Wow.
It's true, right?
It is absolutely true. 100%. Right? Absolutely. Mark, you're a guy, we talk a lot of times. We talk and we reference some of those high-level players that influence us on the social media level that we draw influence from, their videos, their audios, whatever. Do you have a favorite saying from any one of these individuals, a favorite phrase, a favorite monumental, uplifting, you know, phrase that really just it hits you and you're like, all right, this is it. We're good. We're going to be okay.
Good.
That's it. Good.
Good.
Tell us good. Good. What do you mean good? Like, what's good? Everything's good?
No, because when things are bad and it's all going wrong, you think you're going to fail. Good. Now we have more time to train. Now we have more time to learn. Now we can take those failures and we can digress and learn from the mistakes that we made. We're not going to live in the past, but we're going to take those mistakes. We're going to find something good about them. We're going to dust off. We're going to recalibrate. We're going to re-engage, and we're going to get back on the warpath. Good. Jocko Willink, Extreme Ownership.
I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it. So you'd highly recommend that book?
I love that book. Okay. I read that book two or three times now. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Who is that?
Carnegie.
Dale Carnegie.
There you go. I know it's Carnegie something.
Yeah. Carnegie Hall? No.
Not quite. Not a person.
Not quite.
No, I got you. That's awesome. So tell me then, just a couple final questions here. If you could ask a question, you step into my shoes, I'm in your position, what question would you ask that I haven't asked you yet?
What question would I ask myself? We pulled this question on each other last night before we went live on our last one. What would we do if we were this person at this time in our life versus
what would 2020 Jeff to say to 2015 Jeff and vice versa? So if you were interviewing me, then what would you ask me? What question is on your mind that I haven't asked you yet?
What brings you to faith?
What brings me to faith?
Or excuse me. What brings you to faith?
So my answer to that is simply as, constant, the one constant that has always been there in my life, that has been the guiding force between the most important people and impactful people in my life who have never given up on me, is God and the faith that they had in me and my abilities. In my darkest days, the moments where I was couldn't even swim, just trapped in the mud, in the crap, in the sewer pipe, think of Shawshank Redemption, you know, those moments. The people that were with me from the beginning, and the faith in the capabilities that I had to seriously wonder, what are you talking about? And then when I started to look into it and started to open my heart and open my mind and started to experience some of the things that they were talking about, not through influence, just opening myself up and just allowing myself to shut up a little bit. And the things that started happening, when I started to show a little bit of belief, a little bit of faith, a little bit of something and something else, has shifted my life so dramatically in the last 5 years. And that's not to say I'm not without challenge. I'm not without struggle. We know that they exist. You know that they exist. As one of my closest friends, you hear the dirt.
Yes.
But my turn and my resource and my coping is so much different now than what it was then because of these things. And I guess I'd ask you the same question. What drives your faith?
I see too much hate in the world. I see too many people being backstabbers. I purposely go out to try and make the world a little better than I left it, because I've been that guy. I've been the destructor. I've been the poison dealer. I've been the hater. You know what I mean? So after I got right with being drug and alcohol free and being of sound mind and body, that's what drives me to a higher sense of being or a higher power and believing in God. It's I have to believe that, because in today's world, there's too much violence. There is too much political rhetoric. There is too much racial divide. There's too much of the he said, she said bullshit. And social media is just one big pile of dung that people literally have diarrhea of the mouth. Mm-hmm. And in today's world, you can be chastised because you have purple hair, or you paint your fingernails because you're a guy. You know what I mean? You're not looking at the artistic creativeness of that individual. You're not trying to find something good in people. Again, getting back to the good statement, I'd rather be good at something. So I think I'll be good to people. And I think I'll be good that if I do leave this earth, that I'll be remembered for that. And maybe if I was good enough, I get to walk through, maybe I get to go to heaven. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I do. And it's interesting that you say that, because talking about social media in a post today in one of the single dads groups that I'm a part of, a gentleman, and how his son, who's 4 or 5 years old, likes the color orange, had his mom paint his fingernails orange, and he was ostracized and he was mocked in daycare. I believe it was by another child because he had orange fingernails, and that's not how boys are supposed to be. Boys aren't supposed to paint their fingernails orange. And I said, these are learned behaviors. Like you made it a safe and okay place, you and your wife, even though you're not together, for this child to, whether you believe that he expresses himself at 4 years old or even understands what that is, he likes the color orange. He wanted his fingernails orange. Who cares?
Cool.
Somebody else taught
the child. Next week? Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody else taught an individual taught their child that it wasn't okay. At 4 years old, you're teaching your child that it's not okay for a boy to paint their fingernails. Like, you can have ultra conservative beliefs and believe, you know, one thing and the other, and homosexuality is a sin and sex before marriage and everything that the Bible says. But I can't think of a place, and I'm not an expert, where it says you shouldn't paint your fingernails orange if you're a male by birth, by genetics, by your genitals, these kind of things. Like, we teach hatred-based behaviors.
Yes. And love-based
behaviors to our children, and then, you know, their experiences in life hopefully will be influenced to say, hey, this isn't really that right at all. But I digress. I don't want to go into that. I like your answer. Mark, where can people find you on social media? We talked about social media obviously is a platform for hatred, but it can be a platform for beauty and bliss and wonderful things as well. And that's why we use YouTube, Facebook, etc. for our videos. What's the easiest ways for people to get a hold of you?
You just find me right on Facebook, my first and last name. And you'll see my profile picture, this wonderful smile that I carry. Okay.
So why don't you spell your last name for us so we can find you a little easier? I don't want to spell it, but they might not.
Okay. Crotteau.
Awesome. Awesome. And, Facebook is the one, huh?
Facebook is it. No more Instagram. You can find me on LinkedIn. Same name, same picture, same adoring smile. Okay.
Show us that smile again. That's the one. That's the one.
Join green screen.
Okay. So, Mark, what do you feel that your purpose is on this planet? And I love the fact that you said, I don't want to know your questions ahead of time, so I have to come up with something on the spot. Best way to get it. What's your purpose?
When I figure it out, I'll tell you. But right now, it's just to be good. Because I've been the bad guy. I've been the POS. And that's a piece of sugar, by the way. Not really. But that's the polite version of that statement or that acronym. I have been broke. I've been poor. I've been homeless and I've been rich and I've been, okay. And right now, life is pretty well balanced. And what do I want to do? Maintain. I want to help the person that struggles with addictions or depression or alcoholism. And I want to help the people that struggle with faith. Believe it or not, I actually do, because I think that that's really important. And I want to help the little single mom that's trying to get a job. And I want to help the single dads that are out there struggling. Because they try and maintain the job and they get mad and I want to help them take away that pain and frustration, you know, and I want to help that little old lady across the street, proverbial, I guess. And I want to leave this world a little bit better than I found it, because right now it's in a lot of turmoil.
What an awesome answer. Awesome answer. I cut you off. What were you saying that last little bit there?
Oh, just, I don't know. Just roll with it.
Good answers. Absolutely wonderful answers. I appreciate you being on here again tonight, taking the time with us, sure. Pouring your heart out, sharing some things you may not have shared before.
Yeah, this one, I kind of let the cannons roll. I was very candid about my views on religion, which I never share. I absolutely never talk about religion. As a matter of fact, it's a big turnoff for me. But because I respect you as an individual and being a devout Christian, I welcomed it. And thank you for hearing my side of things.
Well, it's my pleasure. As one of my closest friends, you know, we don't always have to have exactly aligning views, exactly ideal scenarios and beliefs and any particular thing, but that should not turn us off from having a positive relationship and a friendship together. I will never allow myself to believe political differences should turn us, you know, turn people away from each other, unless there's a very clear present anger, disdain, whatever you want to call it, against me and my beliefs.
Yes.
But just because I'm this and you're that doesn't mean we can't be friends. Just because I was raised Christian Reformed, you were raised Catholic, I consider myself this, you consider yourself that, doesn't mean we can't be friends.
That's right.
It doesn't. And that's almost, in my opinion, almost a form of hatred and separation and division between people when they allow things that, albeit impactful for their life.
I've seen that that disarray or that disconnect. I've seen that with Christians and Mormons and JWs, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute, folks. Y'all, if I cut your finger, y'all still bleed red, right? And you're all humans, right? So skip all that dramatic crap, and why don't we, you know, talk about things and don't have an opinion, because opinions are like, never mind. And they all stink.
They're like dirt holes.
Yeah. All right. Those things. Yes.
It's been a pleasure having you on here tonight. I really, truly appreciate it. I hope that you have a wonderful, beautiful, magnificent night. And we'll put all the notes in here and we'll talk with you soon. Nice shirt, by the way. I don't know why I just recognized that. So.
Gotcha. Appreciate it, brother. Love you.
Talk with you soon. Thank you, my friend. All right.
Yes.